This is a HeadGum Original.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
I'm dealing with the future of the planet. I'm the necessary shock to the system. I am human evolutionary change. Bulletproof. Superhuman.
Who the hell are you?
Bad guy.
The mission has been compromised. We need help.
Our target's name is Brixton. He's a ghost. We're gonna need the best trackers in the business. Luke Hobbs.
I'm what you call an ice-cold can of whoop-ass.
Career lawman. Always gets his guy. We're gonna need to operate outside the system. Deckard Shaw.
I'm what you might call a champagne problem.
Rogue former MI6 agent. Doesn't play well with others. If we stand a chance against Brixton, you guys have to work together.
No way.
This guy's a real ass.
This job requires stealth. Look at you.
I'm trying to save the world, which, for the record, will be my fourth time. Because I'm really good at it.
You have no idea what we're dealing with.
Hobbs and Shaw. You want a war? You've got one. Three shocks will kill a man.
There we go. It's a bad guy speech.
You had to open your big mouth, didn't you, huh?
Yeah, I thought it was a cool thing to say in the moment.
Okay, so Gabrus is here because Lapkus is dealing with an issue. I guess I shouldn't call it an issue.
It's a project. It's a side project.
You know, she's working on it. She'll have it for 18 years. Gabrus, he's seen the movie. Yeah, maybe she'll give her away earlier. That's what it is. You give them away. Okay, Gabrus has seen the movies. I've seen some. This is the 9th episode of the 4th season. We're working our way through the Fast and the Furious franchise. It's 10 episodes. We're at 9. We're doing Hobbs and Shaw today.
Boom.
Hobbs and Shaw came out in 2019, but yet it feels so fucking dated. So Hobbs and Shaw is available for a fee on Amazon, Apple TV, Google Play, and Vudu. There's going to be spoilers. Come on. So if you don't want spoilers, you got to watch the movie. Gabrus, real quick, what did you think about the movie?
I was let down by it when I saw it in theaters, and I was let down by it even more this time around, having to rewatch it. I was like, maybe there's something enjoyable about it. And I found that there wasn't. By the way, Nicole, you are frozen in such a Jedi way on the Zoom. It's so funny.
I do look like I look like a little Ewok.
Yeah. Yes, you do have. Oh. jump.
I'm an Ewok.
How did you feel about Hobbs and Shaw? This is one of the few that you originally saw.
Yes,
when
I
we
saw
rolled
it in
into
theaters.
It.
I fucking loved it when I saw it in theaters. But then I got to experience the franchise from 4, 5, 6, 7. And I was like, these are infinitely better than Hobbs and Shaw. And then Hobbs and Shaw had just like Kevin Hart's in it, Ryan Reynolds for whatever reason's in it.
All
and I was
the
like
kind of like, oh, these guys are in too many movies, like The Rock included. Like, it's just too many people that are in too many things.
Yes.
And you're just like, ugh, I'm tired of all these people. And they're all just doing like the Apatow stand-in riff, you know, where I'm like, I don't need this. I want to see action. I will say this, when I saw this in the theaters, I unpacked this with my friend Griffin on High and Mighty. And this reason this movie doesn't feel that strong is because it doesn't have family in it. There
it
is
doesn't
no Vin.
Have fucking family. You are right. And then the car chases, they save it towards the end. It's the absolute end of the movie. And I was like, no, I want my Fast and Furious. If Fast and Furious is presenting a movie, I want my car chase up front. I want a car chase in the middle. That's how I want my act breaks. I want a car chase to punctuate the acts. Anyway, we got to introduce our guest. Ooh, baby. Michael Caine. Wait, do you go by Michael Cruz Caine now?
I do. Nowadays, that Cruz is part, and now it's not, it's part of it.
I'm sorry. I stumbled.
Well, no, that's okay. Eventually, his profile is growing to the point where he has to differentiate between the legendary British star of stage and screen, Michael Caine.
Yeah, you're not Michael Caine.
You're Michael
Cruz Caine.
Exactly. You guys get it.
Applying that accent to Michael Cruz Caine. You're not Michael Caine. You're Michael Cruz Caine. Like, that's how you talk. It's
really funny. Well, I'm going to give you credits. You're right. Writer, you're a comedian. You currently write for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. You also host the upcoming HeadGum podcast, A Good Cry, which premieres on September 30th. Welcome, Michael Cruz Caine. Can't wait to get... I'm out of my mind today.
I'd like
the
to introduce...
The whole show is just you talking in insane voices.
I'm here for it. If we're doing Morning Zoo Crew episode of Newcomers, I'm here for it. Michael Cruz Caine, welcome to both the HeadGum family and the Fast family.
Yep.
Uh-huh. AKA, wow. Mi Familia.
Mi Familia in Brazil.
Brazil. I just woke my wife up. She's still asleep, and I'm screaming Brazil in the other room.
I have never seen any Fast and Furious movie, by the way.
So. Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
when there's no family, that's like a term used, because there is family in the movie, Hobbs and Shaw.
In the literal last movie, the bad guy at one point is like, what's important to you, Vin? He's like, family. She's like, stop saying family. And it was really funny.
Charlize Theron's like, stop saying family.
Stop. Yeah, okay. You said family.
You have to answer this question with a word different than fam. All right. So, Mike, you point out something. There is family in this. Jason Statham and Vanessa Kirby are brother and sister.
Yes.
But in flashbacks, they're 3 years apart. In the current time, there are 21-year age difference or
you
something
are
like that.
Absolutely right.
How? When they're like, oh, a little bit, yo, Mick Jagger, and they cut back, and it's like, aren't you 29 years older than her?
Yeah. Also, whoever her makeup artist was didn't like her because they never gave her chapstick. Like, her lips are chapped for half the movie, and I was like... I know she's not in like full makeup, but like we could moisturize her fucking lips.
She's absolutely beautiful. I'm in love with her. I loved her in Mission Impossible. I didn't really know her as an actor outside of Mission Impossible. And then I was so stoked for her to be in this. But the second The Rock tries to sell some chemistry with her, I'm like, get me out of this movie. I never wanted to. I felt like the way when a sex scene happens when you're watching TV with your family.
Yes!
You know what I mean? The second thing, I was like, no, fast forward.
It is gross. Like when she straddles him towards the end, I was like, yuck. And then she kind of smiles, and I was like, that was so forced. You didn't want to smile. You hated that too. We all hated it.
Yeah, it seems like both of them were like, we are repulsed by each other.
Yeah. I think it's because they're both gorgeous humans, but neither of them really exude sexual energy.
Mm-hmm.
Statham, I think, does exude some sexual energy.
Think so.
At least I'm picking up on some vibes. All right.
Also, did you notice at the end of the movie, Jason Statham was talking out of the side of his mouth?
Do you think his jaw got broken by Idris?
I don't know. But I guess he was like, oh, I'm driving. They need to hear me. So instead of turning my head because I'm driving, I'm going to move my mouth. It was a very weird choice.
I think he was doing it for audio.
That's what I feel like, maybe. He's like, I don't want to do ADR.
Jason, please, you owe me big time, brother. Oi, bruv, please turn towards the boom mic, would you, love?
I wasn't sure if you were talking about at the end of the movie proper or in one of the 58 credit scenes. The audacity to do another scene in these credits. The courage that it took.
Let's get these guys back riffing. They don't have to be there on the same day. We'll just shoot him in the diner saying, he's Ryan Reynolds. We got him for 4 hours. We'll make an entire.
We got him for 4 hours.
We'll make
That's
a
truly
runner
what it seemed like. Yep. 4 hours, two locations.
I thought Ryan Reynolds was great in this movie. I thought he was great.
Did you?
I did. I haven't seen
like
the movies.
This first
I don't know who that character is.
No, I don't know who
neither
that character
do we,
is
and we
either.
Just,
we oh, that's not a character from
no,
the other
No, he appears out of nowhere. Kevin Hart appears out of nowhere. Rob Delaney appears out of nowhere. And you're like, oh, I guess.
The fact that Ryan Reynolds is not a character from any of the other movies is insane to me. No. I was positive he was from the
No, but they definitely set it up for him to come back in Hobbs and Shaw too.
No,
that's crazy.
I think the craziest thing set up in this movie, which might not even register be important at all for Michael, is that the bad guy seems to be like the voice. They seem to be attaching that to something larger in the Fast franchise.
Uh-huh.
But I also feel like they might be avoiding it completely. Like they might have been like, what were we thinking? And trying. So I'm curious if they try to drop that. But they tease something to the effect of like, Hobbs and Shaw, like that bad guy's voice, knows more and is going to do something.
Well,
bigger.
Because that bad guy's voice was like, "We've met before, Hobbs, and when we meet again, ooh, baby, it's going to be delicious." And then, I mean, do you think they're going to like tie it back to the Fast and the Furious? Like maybe this person is the one who works for Cypher, or Cypher works for them?
Not to put Michael on the spot, but just can you just guess an actor whose voice that was, even though it's modulated, even though you don't know any of the other movies? I'm just
so
curious.
So you two have already seen subsequent movies in which that actor is identified.
No, that actor is never identified yet. Even 9 has come out since this, and it's not explained at all. And I don't know if 10 is going to.
Oh, they don't explain this in 9.
This doesn't get connected back yet. So that's what
I'm
saying.
The whole movie has the vibe of we'll just write this and like later on we'll do something. So it'll be somebody.
I want you to establish now your guess, just not knowing. Just pick an actor of stature that might be in this movie.
Ooh. You know who I think it okay. I guess if I had to pick an actor that I could see it being like Steve Buscemi.
Yes! Okay, that's canon. That is canon in newcomers. Steve Buscemi is the voice of the...
Wait, who is the voice?
We don't know. I don't think they would credit it.
They didn't credit it?
My guess is that it's Mr. Nobody. It's Kurt Russell's character, and he's flipping to bad eventually.
Oh, no. You think?
I don't know. It's the only other character who sort of lives at that tier.
Never heard of that person. Don't
exactly.
know what that is.
That's what I'm saying is that Steve Buscemi is as good of a guess as I've seen these movies dozens of times each, and your guess has as much weight as mine. That was my whole thesis.
There are just so many things in the movie that it feels like they were like, okay, oh, we're shooting that scene today. Wait, so many things happen.
What was the name of the thing?
The bad What's thing? That? Who knows?
Yeah.
It's so arbitrary. It's like, it's not the God's Eye. It's not the, those are the ones, it's got to be in the notes they gave us, but I.
Yeah.
I,
oh,
What's the name of what?
Snowflake. It's Snowflake.
Snowflake. It's called Snowflake?
Yeah.
Oh, the super virus?
Oh, yeah. My God. No, I wanted the name of the bad guy.
Oh, I don't think they give the name of the bad guy. It's like Etienne or whatever is the name of the company.
Oh. I mean, how confusing.
I think they just call it the director or whatever, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, maybe that. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I was trying to look on IMDb because I was like, I don't think we have it on the character sheet. Yeah, I guess we're never going to know who the fuck the voice is. Yeah. Oh.
The Etienne.
I could also
voice.
See Ethios? It being a thing just based on, like, again, the care that seemed to be put into this movie. I could see it being a thing that never comes back.
Who's the care that was put into this movie?
Just never
Dude, addressed. You're calling, like, the modulation of it all is like, we'll retcon this to be whoever the fuck we
could
want.
Could be anybody.
It, In the lineage of, in the narrative of the other movies, people have been retconned alive and dead and like changed, like backstories have changed, like all just whatever serves the greater, and I'm okay with it because it serves the greater art piece that is the Fast Saga. So it does make sense for this movie to be like, yeah, we'll just modulate the voice and we can make it whoever we need it to be. Like in episode 10, in the 10th movie, we could just be like, and of course I was the director's voice as well. And
it's absolutely.
Like, oh, you're huge. And it gives you like that MCU level boner of like, that's from the guy from the other movie.
Yeah, I could also see it being like Angela Bassett. I think they could go all the way. Like, yeah.
Honestly, I want that. That's what I want now. I want Angela Bassett to be part of the Fast and the Furious franchise, and I want her to have a fight with Helen Mirren.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would sounds be good. So hot.
I was just about to say, I think you're pitching stuff that I was dreaming about in the last episode. And I don't think you want to know how these dreams end.
They end a little wet. Okay,
they start a little wet.
And we're back with the Zoo Crew talking newcomers, Fast and Furious.
And let's hit up the Toretto Gazette. So Vin Diesel hints at a title for the Fast and Furious 10, adding to the franchise's unconventional names. At a Formula One race in Italy, Diesel teased the title for the next installment on Instagram.
It's a Diesel Teasel.
It's a Diesel Teasel, and it's rumored to just be FX. That is a network, Vin Diesel. You cannot call your movie FX.
Vin Diesel can do whatever the fuck he wants.
I guess
dude.
He can.
Nothing is off the table.
The clip shows Diesel in a Fast and Furious tank top with the Toretto and O'Connor names on it under the word brotherhood.
Dude, he's getting special merch made for a fake garage from inside the movie that he's created.
I love it so much.
I don't know who
is
Toretto and what is O'Connor. Those names mean nothing.
Okay, Vin Diesel is Dom Toretto. And then
Paul Walker
is slash was Brian O'Connor.
Brian O'Connor, yeah.
So do they just make somebody else the Paul Walker role? Or is he
they
in the
try.
Fast and Furious universe, he has also died?
No, is still, this is a highlight.
He's still alive.
But they've never shown him. They're like, but they reference him. They're like, no, we told, like in the eighth movie, they go, no, we said that we'd let Brian and Mia have their time apart from the crew. And then in 9, they I'm not going to spoil it for Nicole because I want her to enjoy it, but they reference that he's still living his life.
How like, wild.
They didn't kill him off camera. He just exists off camera.
And they killed people who are still living off in the movies.
Yeah. And they've brought people back to life who are still
who were dead?
Yes.
Oh.
Multiple times.
Multiple times. Letty, who's Vin Diesel's wife, she dies, but Vin or Dom imagines it in his brain, so it's not like concrete, and then she comes back in the next movie. Or they spend a movie without her, and then she comes back with amnesia.
No, she's dead for 2 full movies. She comes back for the big successful one somehow.
Who plays the one?
Michelle Rodriguez.
Checks out. That makes
a lot
of
you're
sense.
Not complaining about having more Michelle Rodriguez in your movies.
But I can see Michelle Rodriguez being Fast and being Furious. That
She's both, baby.
But to finish the Toretto Gazette, he captioned the video, "The race, big things coming, hashtag FX." The film is scheduled to release in theaters on April 7th, 2023. Wow, we gotta wait.
No, that's so far
that's
off.
That's so far away. It'll be directed by Justin Lin. Okay, he's returning to the franchise.
That's good news.
Tyrese, Michelle Rodriguez, and Ludacris are going to come back. I kind of want Wonder Woman to come back. And I
Gal
want
Gadot?
Han to come back.
Okay. She's in this too.
She was in
Everybody's
a couple.
Everybody's in this.
She dies in 6.
We are the only 3 people in the world who have not been in the franchise.
But we don't know if she dies because we don't actually see her die.
She literally dies in a way like that, like we've discussed, where it's open for interpretation. Like, I rolled away from the crash at the runway, and then I was. Wait till you see. They retcon Han's death again, Byers. So you're going to be really excited after you watch 9.
When
they
go, wait.
They adjust what actually happened one last time and finally have the story right. You'll see.
What a dream. What a dream. So, Michael, to catch you up, Han is. He's introduced in the 3rd movie, Fast and the Furious. Tokyo Drift, the least successful movie of the franchise, but one of the most beloved characters comes out of that movie. And
who's Han? What is that? Did you tell
Han
me
is like, for lack of a better term, he's the Asian guy in the crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
But yeah. He's so charismatic, and he's an actor named
Sung
hot.
Kang. He's the guy mm-hmm. from the Tomorrow, whatever that, the Tomorrow, the Justin Lin's first movie, also was Sung Kang's big first movie.
He's so good, but he dies in that movie. But then they like him so much, they bring him back for the next movie, and they just keep being like, you going to Tokyo yet? And he's like, not yet. And he does that for four movies.
They make 5, 6, and 7 chronologically actually take place before 3 so that they can have Han in them. So then Han is technically not dead because the movies now take. And then they do moments like, I thought we were heading to Tokyo, the location in which he would eventually die. And he goes, not yet. And it's like at the end of the movie, it's like, we got one more movie. Let's do it.
Do you think it's like them sitting in a room with, like, you know, a bunch of yarn tying together all these things trying to build the story? Or is it just somebody being like, ah, fuck it?
No, I truly, because they find, I think they just rewatched the movie before and then fill plot holes with new story.
Yeah. They're like, how'd we get from there? It's like, well, let's invent something in the next movie that retroactively explains that.
I mean, in this movie, they're like, so Snowflake was bad. This one's even worse. And I was like, okay. Yeah. So you're setting up for the next movie. They're going to have to get another virus.
Here's some more fun scope for someone who hasn't watched any of the movies. In the first movie, they're stealing DVD players out of a truck. Uh-huh. And in this movie, they're stopping a virus that nukes your insides. Uh-huh.
And The Rock says it no less than 4 times, we're saving the world.
I know. Like, it's so annoying.
Is this scripted or are you just saying
this, dude? The dialogue in the movie is incredible.
Boy.
Every scene, you're like, wow.
Before we talk about the dialogue, I'm going to need a break.
Remember in 2018 when Border Control separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents and deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, 6 years later, there are hundreds of families who still have not been reunified. Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm-reduction-based practice. Since 2018, they've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family to find legal representation, housing, and counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you'd see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like me and believe that families belong together, join me in supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity to donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at alotrolado.org/volunteer. altrolado.org/volunteer. Ooh, do you want to make your mom smile? Start Mother's Day with flowers or surprise her with gifts from the brand she loves. And guess what? It's delivered with the same day with DoorDash. Get 50% off your next order of up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now on DoorDash. And the promo code is NEWCOMERS. Listen, moms are a gift. I know that best. So give her the best this Mother's Day. Select from hundreds of expertly crafted bouquets to the best of tech to self-care essentials delivered right to the door. Get 50% off your next order up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now with the code NEWCOMERS. That's NEWCOMERS. Order using DoorDash today. Terms apply. Get a Mother's Day gift as unique as she is with DoorDash.
Okay, now we're back from the break. Let's get into the dialogue a little bit here.
Okay, but first, Hobbs and Shaw, written by Chris Morgan and Drew Pierce, directed by David Leitch. It was released August 2nd, 2019. I cannot believe that it was released last or a year before the pandemic. Like, it seems such like such an old movie.
It is dated. It feels instantly
dated. It's so
dated.
If, I mean, to me, what it felt like was infinite action scenes. Like, I couldn't believe that another one was happening. Just as I was like, I was just an onslaught of action. And I was like, yeah. I need 1 second to just.
I could have used more.
I think it's the most.
I'm not acclimated to Fast and the Furious. Maybe Fast and Furious is more action. I'm used to, like, you know, two people talking for a minute. And then
like, well, okay. Talking for a
I got
minute.
I got news for you. There is probably as much action in this movie as the other ones, but it's just not as good or as rich. And
yeah.
It is too small, I believe. It's too focused on two people rather than like all the big plot missions mm-hmm. that the other movies are involved in. But at the same time, like, I would also counter argue, I think, Michael, if you had more of Jason Statham and The Rock talking, you'd like this movie even less. I think you're like, that's like, it's like a catch 22. It's like the action's kind of boring. It's like, well, ramp up the dialogue. It's like, really? Mm-hmm. More like lightly homophobic, like lightly. like, I wasn't, at least I never played Dungeons and Dragons. You know, it's like they're just like, it's like the hackiest, like high school bullshit.
It is wild.
The scene where he's The Rock is interviewing Vanessa Kirby and he's like, do you like to tango? And you're like, what is this? What stretch of a metaphor is this about? There seems so many things like that where it's like, here comes an analogy that I have to imagine every viewer is like, where are you going? Where
That's
are you taking
he was
me?
Like, he quoted some, I don't know, Nietzsche.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm flexing this. And this. And then flexed his arm. I was like, ew.
It's like we have to set up that Vanessa Kirby would be remotely attracted to this giant hairless comic book character. He's so like, it's so fun. They're like, he looks so not human in a way that makes him a good action movie star, but doesn't like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger, I thought, had a little more charm and acting ability than The Rock.
Yes.
But just like Arnold, it's like, it never really made sense when women like swooned over his body. It's like, that's not what people like. It's like, that's a weird body. Like,
the
a
Rock
lot of
looks
people like
the
it.
Actual, he looks like the actual Hulk. He looks yeah. like, mm-hmm. what
he's
I, like the real honest to God Hulk. Like,
yeah,
somebody
he's
already
too
Hulked
big.
Into this.
I'm going to kick you so hard in the teeth, you're going to be shitting shoelaces, some bitch. Like, everything is like all those like weird, kitschy, like dad things. I'm
it
like,
is
oh,
weird.
I hope your mother likes hospital food because I'm going to knock your little teeth out. You know, it's like, it's all wrestling promo shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then him and Statham going back and forth reeks of like Seth Rogen and Paul Rudd riffing in an Apatow movie, but those two guys are very, very funny
and charismatic.
And it's kind of hack when they do it. And you're like, but I like it because it's them two being
when
funny.
When Ryan Reynolds and The Rock are going back and forth in the diner, you're like, oh, Reynolds is bringing something to this that they're not going to have when they go to the other scenes.
Yes. Yes, you're absolutely correct. Okay, so let's get into this plot summary. So in London, Hattie Shaw and her team of MI6 agents, which I'm like, what? Attempt to revive or retrieve a super virus called Snowflake from a terrorist organization, Eton. Is that what it's called?
Etion. Yeah.
So Brixton Lore, all of these names are nuts.
I mean,
Hattie Shaw, Brixton Lore, Deckard Shaw. I couldn't believe they killed Shaw's brother when he was like, you killed my brother. I was like, why?
I didn't know the brother was dead. He died off camera, like in between movies. Like, that feels
guess,
awful.
I was like, why is this
That's
Shaw getting the short end of the stick? He came first.
Shaw's brother is the bad guy in 6. Shaw himself is the bad guy in 7. Turns to good in 8. Stars in Hobbs and Shaw.
And then they just kill his brother who started the whole thing.
Yeah, and also in 8 redeems himself by helping rescue Vin Diesel's son from the sky office. I love
I thought, speaking of children, I thought for sure that The Rock's daughter was going to be more involved in this movie. Like, they were very much setting up the idea that they're gonna like ransom her or something.
I think they were just trying to like, I don't know, insincerely bring family to it without saying the word family. And I was like, you gotta say family.
They tried to with all the stuff when he went home to Samoa. Samoa, I think.
I also really liked only The Rock saying the name of that place correctly. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. I gotta say, we'll get to the plot summary, but I do like all the stuff that features like the haka and fucking jacked guys with clubs bashing people. Yeah,
I loved that. All of them were so hot. And I was like, I like this. It was, I don't know, a lot of cultural stuff that people aren't used to. And I thought it was really cool that it was in a mainstream movie.
And remember the haka is what he does with the soccer team in the previous one. Uh-huh. So seeing him do it with like the real actual badass warriors was a whole nother level.
It's very cool. I think they shot that in Hawaii, though.
Probably.
I feel like they should have shot it.
I think I read when I was watching this on Amazon Prime, they have the little like when you tap
X-ray.
The screen, it was like X-ray, that's what it's called. And I think I read in one of those things or somewhere that The Rock like wanted to hire Samoan, like it gave them an excuse to hire a bunch of Samoan actors to be in the movie, which I thought was very cool.
Yeah, that I love. Also, if you watch 90 Day Fiancé, there's a couple where one of them's from Samoa. Kalani and Asuelu. And Asuelu's mom is exactly like the lady who played The Rock's mom. It is kind of wild.
Oh, that's awesome. That's
So are all Samoan moms like this? This is nuts.
That scene also, we'll get back to the beginning of the plot, but that scene also features one of Gabrus's favorite movie tropes is when it's like, all right, we're able to shut down their guns, which means we're only hand-to-hand combat for the next 6 minutes of the movie. It's like the perfect setup. Uh-huh. It's always like, and don't worry, no one in the building is a good guy. You can kill whoever you want. It gives you like that like childlike movie system where you're like, nobody's guns work. And it's like, we can punch each other and use sticks and shit. And it's like, that rolls.
But I like how they set it up pretty early.
Yeah.
Because Vanessa Kirby tried to shoot that gun. He's like, you need a code. And then when they're like, shut down their guns, I was like, yeah, because you need a code.
Just like three guys working on the biggest tech in the world in like a bamboo hut. Being like, all right, we fixed it all. This should work on your arm.
And also Jason Statham finding out they're going to have 6 minutes. And there's not even a moment where he's like, okay, let me think about how that would work. He's like, got it.
Perfect.
That's six the thing minutes. About these Perfect. Movies, everybody knows exactly what they need to do. So, okay, we meet Brixton Lore, who's a Eton operative with a cyber implants that give him superhuman capabilities. He's a
cyborg. Is that not a thing from the other movies?
No, there's never been a cyborg.
That is insane. The number of things you're telling me are unique to this movie is, I was positive that Idris Elba was in the other movies.
Sure,
this is the first reveal of it.
Yes.
I gotta say, my Kinsey scale number is not fully all the way to one side. Idris Elba is an absolute fucking stud. And the idea of him having a cybernetic suit and just like, I would be like, oh, brother.
I mean, watching him get zipped up and almost seeing some butt cleavage, I was like, ooh, daddy, mommy likes.
Good. He looks good in that super tight body suit.
He looks so fucking hot.
That's just like an exquisite man.
Right? He's so pretty.
Ooh, baby.
The motorcycle he rides, which we see
is
here,
incredible.
It's so cool. It's like it's like a toy. It's like his pet.
Love it. It's a Triumph motorcycle because they had some product placement. And then he chases. Is this when they had chased the McLaren? No, that's later. Yeah. There's some like real nice product placement in a way that I'm like, nobody watching this movie can afford a McLaren. Why did we get a close up on the name of this car? No one can go out and buy that.
Use promo code Shaw get you 5% off a McLaren.
So like okay,
podcast ads.
Brixton Lore fucking comes and he arrives and kills all the agents except for Hattie. Hattie, for whatever reason, injects the only dose of Snowflake right up into her, and then she escapes. And then Brixton frames her for killing her team and stealing the Snowflake.
Couldn't she have just taken it? There's like a thing. Couldn't she have just like slipped it in her pocket and been like, we out?
That's logic, and that's not what these movies are about. Thank you. Goodbye.
I just wasn't sure if I had missed a plot point where it's like the only way that this can travel is inside of my body.
No, it's easier if you have a character that we're seeing for the first time mm-hmm. in the movie become infected by it so that there's quote unquote stakes because you are worried about
Hattie Shaw, this person you now know
for 90 seconds.
Who's being chased by a cyborg man who also no one has ever seen.
Who also no one has ever seen, but he is Idris Elba, so you're okay with whatever.
I was positive that if you saw that in theaters, Idris Elba would walk on screen and everyone would be like, oh, that guy from the other movie, but he's not in the other movie.
No, he's not at all.
That is incredible.
I also like low-key, it's kind of dumb, but I like where he keeps his pistol on his outfit, like up by his shoulder.
It's like here? It's like,
yeah, it's kind of weirdly badass. Yeah.
It is easier than like down and up. It's just across and out. I think it works.
When we do the live episode of Newcomers for Fast 10 in 2023 or whatever, we'll have holstered guns on stage with us.
Perfect. And we'll just shoot each other and drive cars right into Largo. So
you're like, oh, you put double reinforced steel. It's not a street fight.
There'll be three new people hosting a podcast that no one has ever heard of.
Right.
So, oh, wait. Shortly after the we see Cypher in this movie? No, we don't.
No.
This synopsis is wrong. It says shortly after the confrontation with Cypher. Oh, wait. Oh, I guess we're picking up where the eighth movie left off.
Yes.
Okay. So after Cypher in the eighth movie, Hobbs and Shaw are both informed of the missing virus and they're recruited to work together in tracking it down, which is like, what? Why? Why is Jason Statham ever thought of to help America when he's a terrorist himself?
I know. Well, in Seven, they try to be like, you're the two best people at hunting Dom ever. So now it's like, and Hobbs and Shaw, they're just like buddies again. And then this is what bothers me about the movie is like, either just make them buddies from the get-go or make them enemies the whole time. Like, they mm-hmm. kind of got over each other in the last movie, so it feels weird to reset to like, oh, I was editor of the school magazine or whatever, you know, like. All the dumb beefs that they bounce right back to for some reason.
Yeah, it's so wild. So, okay, after meeting at a CIA site, Decker goes to Hattie's apartment for information. He's then attacked by Eton operatives. And then Hobbs finds Hattie, brings her to the CIA office. Shaw arrives and tells Hobbs that Hattie's his sister. And then, for whatever reason, Hattie beats up some poor extra or a man who had to audition to make faces.
I think The Rock versus Hattie's fight is kind of cool. She kind of like whoops his ass with a motorcycle helmet and scissoring.
Fun. She does it a lot. She's like, my pussy is a weapon. She like wraps her legs around him at that office. And I was like, well, yeah, he can't see anything.
It's like the Black Widow choreography that they do for ScarJo in those movies. They give it a lot of like the leg locks and the flying, like run up the person, wrap your legs around them, drop the like. It's all like acrobatic jujitsu stuff, which is like, I think, in my opinion, poor writing of like, that's the only way this woman would be able to take down. But I mean, Hobbs is demonstrated enormous. Him like ripping handcuffs off his arms and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
he should kill
a woman if he hits her at full strength.
He at one point just like lifts her up right into the sky. And I was like, I mean, this can't be good for her.
Yeah, but that's well,
one point. Also, I guess I don't want to skip too far ahead, but at one point, isn't he holding a helicopter?
Yes.
He by himself holding a helicopter.
Yes.
And a chain. He's got a chain.
Yeah, when that happened in theaters, I just went, hey, no. Did you do that?
I cheered, but it was a ripoff of Captain America where Chris Evans does do it. And again, not to keep bringing my Kinsey scale into this, but when Chris Evans did it in whatever Captain America movie that was, I felt it.
Ooh.
When his bicep got turgid, I played along at home.
It felt like they were trying to make this a Marvel movie.
Well, with the fucking giving Idris the crazy like cyber suit, it really does. Like, it felt like they couldn't heighten with cars because cars is the Fast and Furious thing. So they made everyone like weirdly super in this, right?
Uh-huh.
Like the running down the building and stuff, which I think we're about to come to in the CIA part. That's a pretty fun long action sequence because it ends with the McLaren and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But, that's all like wild Marvel shit, leaping out of the building, soaring through the air. It was like all trying to figure out ways to do that without breaking the laws of
reality,
you know, reality.
But they did.
But they do. Like, yeah. And they have been since like Fast Five.
I mean, I gotta say, the laws of reality are broken when Brixton like blows up the fucking office and Hobbs does a somersault to grab a gun. I was like, there is no way The Rock can do a somersault.
Yeah. And if he did, he would like fucking smush the like it would be like he would leave like a crevice. Like,
yeah, there would be like there divot. Would be like a it would start a tornado. Like a weather event.
Crater would appear, like a whirlwind, like all at the same time.
Also
just flipping that big ass.
Right
around.
Before Brixton walks in, Hattie finishes fighting with The Rock and she's like, I have to go. I'm sick or whatever. The virus is in me. And she walks towards the window. And I was like, was she going to jump out the window?
Yes. Where's she going?
There's no door there.
No idea what her plan is there.
There's so many moments like that in the movie where you're like, what are we supposed to believe that she's doing? And it just reinforces that idea of like, well, we have to get this done. We have 10 more minutes to do this. So let's say she's going that way.
And there feels like a lot, especially with the Hattie character, there feels like a lot of moments where they're like, all right, and then Hobbs and Shaw are over here and they're doing, and it's like, hey, guys, we need something for Hattie to do. And like, oh, let her be sort of like a guy's holding a gun to her head and she's looking at a wire. And it's like, okay, yeah, we can cut back to that like a dozen times to
I mean,
keep
that
her
was
in the
very
story.
Funny because I was like, why wouldn't he just, because she had the virus. But then I was like, I don't know. Just scoop it out of her or whatever. But anyway, Deckard recognizes Brixton as an old colleague turned enemy in a very murky explanation. Yeah. He shot him. He thought he killed him. And then he like flipped to be part of this terrorist organization.
I mean, in all of this, this is where I can't believe Idris Elba's not in the other movies. Because when this was happening, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? What does any of this mean? I'm like, I'm sure people have seen the other movies.
No.
But you're telling me you also have no idea.
I have
nothing
no idea
to do with other movies. Yeah.
Like where they were old colleagues. I don't know
I wish
who
I could
they
convey,
were working for.
I wish I could convey how little Jason Statham has been in the movies up until this point, too. He's only been in 7 and 8, and he's already got like backstory that's like woven in that we're supposed to give a fuck about.
It's so wild. And then there's this pretty fun car chase with some Triumph motorcycles and then this very cool McLaren that fucking Jason Statham has to pull himself out of every time he gets out, like really like work to get out of this little car.
Now, wait, something that happened in this movie that I meant to tell you too, Byer, which I think you would like. Statham's claim to fame, like his first like big pop off, was in a BMW branded short film called The Driver, directed by Guy Ritchie.
Oh.
And Statham plays a dude who's like a good driver, like a security driver. And this was in like the early 2000s. And before he became the transporter and all those other movies that he would later go on to do. And so him being added to the Fast and Furious franchise, and I now know how many listeners of this pod have not watched any of the movies, but like this podcast.
Wow.
So I want to convey, so Statham coming in is like a cool, like we're bringing more drivers into the world.
Yeah,
like,
and Diesel is a genius.
He's not a fucking bad dude. He's got to
figure
it out.
No, that's like so fucking smart.
Yeah, and then the only other thing about this movie that drives me crazy is that they offer up in the beginning that the answers are we extract it from Hattie or we kill Hattie. Those are the only two options.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what about cutting her hand off?
Yeah, because when they go inside her body, it's just bouncing around near where it was injected.
It's not in her bloodstream completely saturated and that thing's going to pull it out. No, cut her fucking hand off. That sucks, Hattie, that you have one hand. But it's either that or chase around the world a bunch of android soldiers and hope to use this surgery. Or maybe my Maori cousin can fix it. My Samoan cousin can fix it and we do this. It's like Hattie, cut your fucking hand off, sweetheart. It sucks. We get you a kid claw.
Love when she was like, I am the virus. That made me laugh really hard.
And again, we do not know this woman from a fucking hole in the wall.
Never
so she's
met
like,
her,
I
never
am the virus.
Her.
It's like, I'm ready to die for her. It's like, why?
It's like, who cares? We don't know her. So after this like interesting fight.
World.
I say interesting because it wasn't satisfying, but Idris Elba goes through a bus. I kind of like that. If I was like on a double-decker bus and Idris Elba went right through it, and then just like looked all mad, I'd be like, wow, I love it here in England. I'm going to move here. I'd be so happy.
It's string up out, bruv.
So then Brixton frames all three as traitors, which is a thing that can happen in the universe where this all is, of a sudden they're plastered everywhere and they're like, these are bad people.
This is overused in action movies so much as like a guy who's seen them all. Mission Impossible movies, Fast and the Furious movies, because they have to be like, well, how do we explain that these guys who are legendary heroes have no help whatsoever from anyone? It's like, make them enemies of the state. And it's like, woo, and what are we going to do? We'll show like a random CNN screen grab and just say enemies of the state on them. No explanation how we get this information out there, why people believe it or anything like that.
Well, we learned that the voice can like penetrate. Well, I guess we don't see that till later, that he can like go through radio waves and computers and televisions. Also,
and
this
the same
white
graphics
room?
Show up. It's not just the sound. Like all of a sudden, the graphic design,
the little equalizer,
is the same forever.
Yeah, the white room where Brixton is like, send the news to CNN is so weird. And I'm like, who are these people typing away? Is this a lab? What is going on?
I thought he was saying that they were going to hack the things.
Oh,
I guess they control all the news media.
Yeah,
so I was
guess
like, how
something
is this a
like
hack?
That.
Like they hacked the brains of the anchors. I didn't understand.
There's a really weird moment where they're like, "Well, we did the normal 40% of all news outlets." He's like, "We need more," and it's like, "How much access do you guys have?" There's like news is so partisan now that you can't get 60% of the news with the same story, because 10% of them will be like, "It's a fucking hoax," you know.
That is funny. Fox News would run that story as like, it's a hoax. They're not dangerous at all. They're nice people.
They're good people. It's Antifa that's actually stole the snowflake virus. It's the deep state. Joe Biden and Dr. Jill have the virus. It's like, I don't know.
They're
about
keeping
that.
It under a fucking pizza restaurant.
That was honestly the wildest thing.
I think so. We should say, for the sake of listeners, wildest thing so far. We are recording this 3 days before this episode drops. God knows what people can do in the meantime.
Truly, people be wild.
People be wild.
So, Deckard.
What a way to I wish you had an MSNBC show by it, where it was just you showing clips and going, people be wild. I would watch it every week. I would become a news junkie if you had a show like that.
I mean, that's what I did when I was watching The Insurrection live in my living room. Yeah. Can you believe that fucking happened?
I gotta say, when it was going down, in hindsight, it was really scary. But when it was going down, I was like, I don't care this strongly about anything.
Me
like,
either.
I couldn't even imagine. Like, they're like, your wife's in the Capitol building. I'd be like, all right, well, I'll wait till she comes out. I'll find her later. Like, I couldn't even imagine what would make me like. There's not anything I like in the world enough to do what these people did on behalf of whatever belief system they're in.
Can you imagine scaling the wall of a government building?
I can't imagine scaling the wall of any building.
Post office or whatever.
I last night wanted a LaCroix and wouldn't go down my stairs. I'm going to scale a wall of a government building. Get real. No, I went to bed dehydrated, okay?
I feel like shit this morning.
Yeah, I don't
feel
good at all. Okay, so Deckard, Hobbs, and Hattie track down the most adorable man.
Anyway, back to the movie.
The most adorable man I've ever seen, Professor Andreiko, who created Snowflake. He claims it was created to deliver vaccines. Oh my God. Maybe this is why nobody wants to get vaccinated, because they all saw fucking Hobbs and Shaw and they're like, we're going to get Snowflake. Oh my God. And they call liberals snowflakes. This is why we have COVID. Hobbs and fucking Shaw.
The fact that they call it Snowflake in this, it's like, no.
Yeah, what were you doing? My God. Okay. So to deliver vaccines to prevent Eton from using the super virus against humanity. And then he explains Hattie must have the virus removed with a specialized extraction device in Eton's Chernobyl facility.
It's only in Eton's Chernobyl facility. Just imagine that. Listen to what that sentence says. So So you're saying we need to sneak into the, you know, it's like, oh, and then I love everyone's like, all right, well, that's the plan. I got connections.
I mean, it's so funny. And then, well, before they find the professor, they go to like Shaw's lair where he's got like a bunch of cars and vacuum sealed outfits in different sizes for different people.
Oh my
people.
God. All right. Yeah. Wait, I can't believe we almost forgot this. He like yes. sets the rock up to get his cavities searched at TSA yes. or whatever, and then, it's like, also you guys are undercover because you're labeled as terrorists. Why? How
and
is
you're
he,
playing what? Games? You named him Mike Kaka Small.
Mike.
My name's Michael. Michael. Mike.
Mike Oxmall.
Oh Mike yes, Oxmall. Mike Oxmall. That's what
Mike
it is.
Mike Oxmall. Yeah.
Which, boy, that made me laugh pretty hard. Also, the outfit they put him in, I was like, so clothes do not fit him in any capacity.
No, there's a reason he wears, it's not just because of his insane sponsorship deal with Under Armour. Mm-hmm. He literally can only wear like sweat wicking shirts and shit and vests with straps and
buckles. He can only
wear
like the actual Batman suit and that's the only clothes that fit him.
I mean, it is fully wild. So he gets detained, but then makes it on the plane because he's like, people like me. And I was like, I've been detained. People liked me, and it took 3 hours. Yeah. I went to Canada, and they were like, why are you here? And I was like, to do improv. And they're like, do you have a visa? And I was like, nobody gets paid to do improv. And they're like, detained.
Which honestly is right. That's what should
happen. In Canada, they do get paid.
People doing international travel for improv, you got to be like, no.
Just be thankful. Be thankful. That's the first time anyone's ever asked a follow-up question about improv.
I mean,
so frequently
they're
like,
you're like,
go
ahead.
You say improv, people are like, put a gun silently in their mouth. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm sorry. I'm not saying you have to do improv or watch it. Don't worry.
No, no. I'll go. I'll leave. I don't want to be here knowing that you're doing improv.
Wait, so is this where they get on the plane and they have yes. the you want to fuck my sister talk?
My God, when that man said she can climb this brown mountain, I was like, I mean, when you say brown mountain, that's like shit.
This is so insane. It's like such an obnoxious, wild behavior.
Yes.
And I'm an obnoxious, wild person who's very attracted to Vanessa Kirby. And I would, like, she's asleep. Don't talk about her.
Yes,
like this.
She's sleeping. She could probably hear you.
Neither also, of you should be talking about this bullshit.
I loved
freaks.
All of the extras in the background fading in and out of sleep, kind of leaning towards the camera. I'm like, you see my face? Am I in it? Am I in it?
Can you imagine also being the person sitting next to the Rock in coach? Like how mad you would be, that lady who he's like, I like your babushka.
That's why she wasn't mad. She was like, this giant nasty man complimented
me. I
want to
climb that brown mountain, baby.
my flag at the having sex summit. With her, he would annihilate her. She'd be pulverized to death.
Well, that's all. You can't even picture it. Imagine him holding her and kissing her, and you would think it looked like the end of King Kong. It would be like, put her down. Like, he's going to climb a building with her or something. He's so massive and so muscular. It's like, let go of her. Also, she's not, like, childlike, but she's visibly much younger than both of these guys.
She's very young. I also, okay, this is going to sound very mean, and I hope Vanessa doesn't ever hear this, but I played a game when I was watching. I was like, is she pretty or is she blonde? I couldn't figure it out. And then her makeup artist hated her because her winged eyeliner kept changing. And by the end of the movie, it was so big and so overdrawn that I was like, they hate her. They won't give her chapstick and they won't fix her eye makeup.
They were like, it was probably The Rock being like, I'm the prettiest sumbitch in the and I'm the, you know, like, you better make her look a little worse because I'm the best looking sumbitch this side of the Brown Mountain.
Sumbitch.
In the scene where, am I allowed to talk about a scene that happens later in the movie? I was going to say, when they smooch later, there's something weird. Like, she has like beads of sweat running down her face or something. Uh-huh. I want to be like, can someone
touch her up? No, her makeup artist retired midway through the movie and they left her on her own and she had to do it herself. Real quick, fucking Kevin Hart tucking and rolling out of that seat made me laugh really hard. And then he's the air marshal And I was like, what is going on? And he's doing the whole improv thing back and forth. And like, don't talk like that. Talk like what? Don't talk like that. Don't talk. And I was like, oh, well, this movie, you're making it longer. This is a 2-hour, 19-minute movie.
We do not need these riffs. And it is, Kevin Hart is an injection of life into this movie. But then once he's riffing with Statham and The Rock, you're like, okay, I just have one scene where Kevin Hart and Ryan Reynolds talk to each other so that we can have some juice,
like,
and then get the fuck out of this
movie. I would
movie.
Have liked that very much.
You can just see the script, that page just says like Kevin Hart and then underneath it, parentheses, anything he wants to say, which is what happened.
Whatever he wants to say, we'll make it true in Hobbs and Shaw too.
I thoroughly enjoyed his second scene because they only had him for a day when he was in the bathroom.
In the bathroom.
That made me laugh very hard.
Oh, toilets always work on Uncle Gabrus.
Yeah. So, okay, they set out to infiltrate this facility, and for whatever reason, there's two doors in a hallway of men, and a hallway with one man working on this, like, weird Tesla truck, and they pick their hallways to go through. This was, like, so weird to me. They have, like, heat guns that sense people, and then Shaw's like, this is your door, and The Rock's like, I don't know, I picked my door, some bitch.
Did we talk about how Jason Statham, to get Hattie kidnapped by them and also get the gear, they go to that absolute smoke show brunette's house?
About that,
she walks up to him, just makes out with him, and then it's like,
so wild. And it's like, what are they doing, robbing this mansion? And she's like, and then when Idris Elba's, it was just a parade of hot people. Idris Elba comes in, is talking to that hot lady, and is like, is she alone? And she's like, uh huh. He's like, if she's not, I'll rip out your heart. And she's like, if I had a heart for you to rip out, I think you could do it, but like, you don't, because I don't have a heart.
Because I'm like a tough chick.
I'm tough, 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 and I got a gaggle of tough bitches behind me. We're gonna prance around this mansion some more. I was like, who are these people? Michael, we've never seen these people either.
That is, it's crazy to me that that's not a character that's being called that.
This is how the other movies are, like, they're copying the formula of the other movie of like, I actually have a connection in this town, and that connection is a big cameo cast stunt or someone from the previous movies that you're like, oh shit, or from the cold open or something. That's something the movies do, but this is a standalone trying to match those moments, and it's really funny because it's like, and of course your favorite character, the chick with the gun,
you know, like Mrs. M or something. Yeah, exactly.
So nuts. It made zero sense. Real quick, we have to take a break.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. My social battery right now, where would I put it? Ooh, I mean, I'm kind of looking to connect with friends. I'm also looking to retreat a little bit and be by myself. It's hard to know exactly what you need at any given time. And it can be so easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up so much. After the winter, the spring is here. Well, what's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I started therapy when I was about 30, and it was so, so helpful for me for learning about myself, learning about boundaries, learning about my relationships with other people, and how to deal with other people. There's so many things you can benefit from therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. So just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/newcomers today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/newcomers.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say your aunt?
And dare you say my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
So now they're in this fucking choose your own adventure of men to kill. And The Rock gets one big man who's bigger than him, but knocks him out real quick. Jason Statham, he got to knock out eight of them and then use one of their faces to open a door. But boy, oh boy, he just can't get it right. He didn't have the right one with access. He slams one, he slams two, he slams three, he slams four, he slams five, he slams six, he slams seven, he slams eight, he slams nine, he slams. I was like, what? We have to keep going.
Classic rule of eights in comedy. I will say,
I enjoyed that part, even though it made, I was like, this is insane to me that it's happening plot-wise. Like, this movie's 97 hours long. That was fun to me. I liked him smashing all the different faces into the retinal scan or whatever.
I thought it was fun too, but it's a real note on the length of the movie.
There was too like, many
smashes. Keep moving. Yeah.
Three would have been great. Rule of threes. I would have loved that. But, like, truly, he slams, like, eight people. And then they open the doors, and then fucking Idris Elba and all his crew are there. And he's like, never thought you'd make it through. And I'm like, you did, because you set up your guys with guns. So, like, you knew they were coming.
You had eight guys in one room and one guy in a truck in the other room, which I don't understand.
Weird. Why.
And also, like, why do you need that much security if you're just all waiting on the other side with guns anyway? It's like, I don't know. Whatever.
It doesn't make any
now,
sense.
We just need to get our characters chained up for some BDSM electricity
boy.
Shit.
Oh, boy. Yeah. How hot that was.
It was
while they're
hot.
Chained up getting electrocuted via chains, I have no idea how this machine works. But Vanessa Kirby is with that little cartoon man who's the scientist, and he's like trying to extrapolate the virus. But then she's like, no, we're going to do something different. He's like, OK, I'll help. And then helps her. And then he comes with fire and he blows out fucking Idris Elba. And then I was like, so fire is the only thing that hurts him? Oh, I forgot the Mick Jagger part. Sorry.
I was about to say, and then this is the, and it's, and I only want to bring it up because it's so inconsequential to the movie that they were like, oh, the Keith Moon. And it's like, all right, so that's the thing. We have plans.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, The Rock says Mick Jagger. And he's like,
And then and I was like, Idris Elba would go, what are you guys talking about?
But also, what's the Mick Jagger plan? It's like, oh, Mick Jagger. Okay, so the scientist we've never met is going to blow a blowtorch out, and then from there we'll be able to escape. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. The plan, she gets caught immediately. She puts the gun
to
his head.
She sure does.
It's like, oh,
he's like,
Mick
you
Jagger.
Can't shoot me.
It's just the movie feels like they had every idea, and no one was like, "Let's actually not do these. These three we don't need." They're like, "No, we'll do all." It's like a Make-A-Wish film where the kid's like, "And I want to do this and this and this." And they're like, great, that's great. It's all in.
Do you think Adam Levine got the moves like Jagger song idea from seeing Hobbs and
Absolutely.
Shaw?
Absolutely,
100%.
Absolutely. So then they escape. There's another chase where they fight. What is his name? Brixton. So Hobbs
Brixton
and Shaw
war.
Fight Brixton on this like flatbed truck as they blow up the whole like fucking science center. So like everyone dies in there, right?
Yeah, they do a good job of being.
Everyone dies.
Everyone's a bad guy in here, so don't worry if you don't care if Chernobyl collapses. Yeah, they're like such dicks in these movies where it's like, no, everyone in here is a piece of shit, so when our heroes leave, it's okay to watch it burn.
I've been to the personnel file of every character in here, and I know they are all bad.
They're all kind of annoying to waiters, so you're okay with them dying.
So then Hobbs is like, I know where we can go. I haven't been there in 20 years and nobody wants me. Samoa! So Samoa, do I say it? I say it wrong.
I say I Samoa. Know. I think a lot of white people say, or non-Samoans say Samoa. And I think he's really over enunciating. So I think he's trying to let us know.
Wait, how does he say it?
Samoa.
Samoa.
Yeah.
And not Samoa. Samoa. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. To visit Jonah, his brother, a mechanic. And he's like, he punches him. Jonah punches him right in the face when he sees him.
So, yeah, and weirdly, Statham has that bet where he's like, he's going to punch him right in the face.
Yeah, and I was like, why did we need that? Why did we did not need to hear that. Who fucking cares? So then Jonah's like, all right, I'll help you fix this piece of machinery I have never seen one time in my life that is, you know, eminent for the world ending.
I mostly do classic cars, but I think I could take a look at this virus extraction machine.
It's great. So then he was looking for guns, and then mommy's like, there's no guns here in Samoa. We only have this. We'll fight with heart. And I was like, what?
That,
no.
Yeah, so she has like all the ancient tribal weapons of like these warring clans, like these old weapons. And you're like, oh, that's kind of fun. And then it's like, we're going to figure out. So then cut to Hattie, who's an MI6 agent. Now she's hacking into the gun. A dude who's a car mechanic. But by the way, in the world of as Michael, you haven't seen all the other movies. Being a car mechanic in the first movie does mean you are the world's second greatest hacker by this fifth
movie. Yeah, you can do anything.
It imbues you with like every ability. You're like a shaman. If you
can retroactively, you can retcon it to be like, he's good with circuits, which means we're going to need him here in Brazil to steal a safe. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you mean the guy who owned a car wash mechanic shop in Fast 2? It's like, that's the one.
This is Ludacris' storyline. Ludacris owned like a car wash in the second movie.
Yeah.
And then by the fifth movie, he like knew how to hack into like government systems.
He's like a nuclear physicist.
Yeah, he's the one who hacks the safe. Yeah.
The reason he gave was, I had a life before this. And it was like, what? That's not. No,
it's like, actually, we saw it in the other movies. Yeah, you're not allowed to say that.
You didn't do any of that.
I know the timeline's really fuzzy on these movies where how many years take place in between them, but God only knows.
So they set up traps around the island. For whatever reason, the Rock knows there's a storm coming. And they're gonna trap him and fight him hand to hand. So then Jonah successfully repairs the device after he's like, don't rush me. And then he like turns it on. He's like, ooh, okay, we did it.
That's a crazy scene too.
It's really crazy. And it's punctuated by how crazy it is when Hattie's like, all right, good. And just hooks it up to her arm. It's like, and it's like, wait a minute. Do we even know what this thing does and how it works? And we're just like, okay, it's good. All right.
We don't know. Just start moving.
I think I did it. He's like, all right, suck the blood out of my arm right now. It was crazy. Yeah.
So Brixton's army is defeated in a battle where they like spray a bunch of fire. He captures Hattie via helicopter because she's all woozy walking around with like this weapon. And I was like, I mean, make her sit down. Like, have her sit this one out. Why is she stumbling around?
That why is the plan not to have her hidden with that thing somewhere deep? Like, and it's like, we'll get you. All you need is 30 minutes alone. It's like, no, stand outside in the middle of the melee. You know, it's like the fighting here is fun. We get to see Roman Reigns, who's the other cousin, who's like the big, handsome, long-haired guy. He's a WWE wrestler, too, who's of Samoan descent. So
hot.
I think
everyone in this scene is hot.
Dude, and the big heavyset guys in the running around in their slippers, like watching them body slam people and shit. I'm here for all of it.
Truly.
I like the car thing that they do. They hook up to the chopper and eventually start linking their like all these old jalopies together. And then it's not a Fast and the Furious saga movie if we don't have a little bit of Nos. But I believe
I believe they call it Island.
What do they call it though?
Oh,
they're
I
like give
know.
Us some of the island spirit or something. And they have like a name for it that's not Nos.
I
and
don't
they all
remember.
Hit the Nos.
I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah.
What?
So Nos. It's like nitrous oxide that you hook up to your engine, and when you turn it on, it gives you like a chemical reaction that boosts your engine,
like a turbo
in the
intake. Boost.
Yeah, and then it makes you like go faster. And in every Fast and the Furious movie, they have Nas, and at one point they're like Cuban Nas, and that makes me laugh. So then they have a fight. They like crash into this water, and it's so funny to me that Hobbs can fall down from big places and is like fine.
But well, yeah, he leaps 70 stories onto a guy's back who's like on a cable. It's like,
yeah,
he's
but
300
in,
pounds.
In seven, he falls from a window and lands on that car and then was incapacitated and in the hospital.
And six, he jumps out of a plane into a Jeep and is fine.
You know, he's got different levels for every movie. But yeah, they fall into this water and then they have this scene where I don't understand why they did it. So it's a fight sequence where some of it is in slow-mo, some of it is not. And then I guess it's in their contracts that they're like, we're all down at once, we're all up at once. Because it was a lot of up and down, all of them at the same time.
So the weird conceit of this fight is, due to Idris Elba's like high-tech imagery units or whatever, he's able to calculate blocks and punches very well.
Mm-hmm.
But not at the same time is what they
learned. Right, it's like, the setting is in mono. Or whatever.
So right,
like,
exactly.
Like the second thing happens, he's like, "Durr."
Yeah, he's
putting crazy. Based on the other fights, he's handled like many things simultaneously.
Yes, so. He seems to process everything quite well. But I think like so they said, and it's kind. I gotta say, it's not executed well.
No.
But the setup for this is a fun way to do a 2v1 fight. Like it was a fun way to, and I did enjoy the slow-mo of like the faces being like smushed.
Sure.
Like, that was kind of cool. But ultimately it felt, we've only seen, like, these are just all three superheroes. So mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like there's really any
stakes.
It
didn't really feel like there was any stakes. I felt like it was like a real like, oh, okay, this is a workaround them fighting Black Superman. And I love that he called himself Black Superman at one point. And I hate it when The Rock was like, this is your kryptonite. And I was like, oh, fuck off. Just go home. Go home and take care of your daughter. But then I was like, oh, my God, was it an Idris Elba's contract that, like, they can't kill him? Because then Eton or whatever fucking shuts him down.
Yeah, shuts him down from inside and he just... Well, again, he dies the way you need to die in the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah, where you can
movies.
Absolutely come back.
That's
Hundo P. Stolar.
Do you think he'll come back in the next Hobbs and Shaw and be a good guy?
Of
a
course.
A good guy.
Of course. They redid your computers and now he's a good guy. All right, bruv.
Hobbs and Shaw and lore.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And he has a perfect dumb name to throw in there.
Hobbs, Shaw,
I would love
and
it
lore.
If they did sequels to this where they had to add a new name to every title. So
it's eventually
like,
yeah.
The
baker, the candlestick maker. The,
it's like Hobbs, Shaw, lore, Leibowitz.
Leibowitz!
It's like those t-shirts that were popular for a while where you just named all the characters from something.
Sure.
Bilbo and Frodo and da-da-da-da-da.
And then in the credit scenes, usually you get one, but they give you more than that. So Hobbs brings his daughter to meet his family in Samoa. Deckard and Hattie plan to bust their mother out of prison. Hobbs receives a call from his partner, Locke, which you're like, that's his partner? Informing him that there's another virus worse than the snowflake.
It's such an arbitrary hiding, like in Hobbs and Shaw too. We found a worse virus. This one's called Two Snowflakes.
We got two snowflakes here. So some quick trivia.
Please.
Oh, this film was shot over the period of 5 months. That's not that long.
No.
The Rock said he tried to get Jason Momoa to play the role of Hobbs' brother, but scheduling issues prevented it from happening.
So they got that guy. Is that Cliff Curtis, the actor? The actor, I feel like, has played 100 different races. Like,
I gotta say,
every movie, he's a different race.
Cliff Curtis is like legendarily ethnically ambiguous in Hollywood. The other major role you would know him from is the like super hardcore Mexican gangster in Training Day.
Oh, how wild.
Yeah. He's like one of those dudes who's played a bunch of different ethnicities over the years.
Where do you
years.
Think he's from?
That's a great question.
New Zealand.
Like Maori or something.
Yeah, I think he is Maori. I think he's playing like Pacific Islander in this movie. Like, is the first time he's playing his actual culture.
Uh huh. Yeah, he's how do you say that? Morari?
Maori.
Maori. Yes, that's what he is.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's cool.
That he was a Mexican gangster. I mean, cool. cool. Yeah, I'm here for it.
Yeah, he somehow escaped the scrutiny of being able to play just every race. But he's grandfathered into being every race.
So the exterior of the Eaton headquarters is actually the McLaren Technology Center, where the McLaren Formula One team is based. The building was added to a CGI landscape. Wow. Some of the McLaren employees also appeared in this movie as extras. So McLaren had their hands in this movie.
Yeah, and I got to say that car chase with the Transformer. Oh, did you guys hear like legit Transformer noises sometimes while Idris Elba was on camera? Like,
no.
You hear, like, I swear they did some sound effect and like light Foley that's like choo, 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 choo. Like when the bike
I
is shifting.
His bike. Yeah.
I was like, they're just straight up like, and that really nailed it on this rewatch for me, that this has Transformers energy in that it's like Fast and the Furious is big blockbusters, but you still feel connected to it emotionally. And this one felt like Transformers, which are fun, big blockbuster movies, but it's hard to feel emotionally connected in any way.
I fully agree.
And I think it's because that, and it's like, now that I think about it, it's like The Rock is like a CGI Optimus Prime, really. You know what I mean? Where it's like, it's hard to connect to a human being that looks and acts like that.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. Okay, so this movie was nominated for Favorite Action Movie at the People's Choice Awards, and The Rock was nominated for Favorite Male Movie Star at the People's Choice Awards. I mean, okay.
Killer.
67% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. A critic from Mashable wrote, maybe the family isn't all there, but it turns out the extended relatives throw a pretty good party too. My God, the budget was $200 million, which is a lot. And then by the end of its run, it grossed $760 million.
Mission accomplished.
Which is like, I feel like Fast and the Furious does better, right?
It does.
It must.
Yeah, Fast 9 broke a bill. Easy.
So wild.
Yeah.
So we're at the end. Michael Cruz Kane, you got anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I got a podcast coming out on HeadGum that we've already mentioned. It's called A Good Cry. It comes out on September 30th, and it's about grief, and I really hope you listen because I had a great time making it.
I was going to say, I don't know what the premise of the podcast is, but Mike, I can attest to Michael being able to walk the fine line of sad and humor at the same time of like really finding humor in some real grief stricken moments. So that is something I do know about you. So I'm pumped to listen to the podcast.
Thank you, sir.
Exciting. Yeah. Before we go, Byer, I just want to tease because this is the ninth episode of the series.
We have one more.
We have one more, and you've never seen Fast 9. Correct?
I have never seen Fast 9. I stayed away from spoilers. I stayed away from anything. The only thing I know is John Cena is in it.
Yeah.
And that is truly the only information that I have.
And
I am pretty jazzed to watch it.
It was the first movie I saw that broke my spell of not going to the movies during the pandemic. I loved it so much. Have not seen it since the night I saw it, opening night. So this will be my first rewatch, which I was holding off on. And I am so looking forward to hearing your thoughts on what I think is a return to form after doing Fast 8 and Hobbs and Shaw. Yeah.
I'm really excited because Fast 8 was so disappointing.
Wait, I kind of want to send Michael, I want to send you on a mission to watch Fast 9 without any other context. Like, just throw it on demand at some point and just watch it and report back. And we'd love to have like a special be like, and this dude, Michael, who has not seen anything, this is what he, because there's even more cross connection. And it's like watching like the last issue of a comic that you never read. Like, everything starts getting connected, and I think it'd be really fun for you to watch sans any context.
Just treating it like a standalone movie. Yeah, I will watch it just to have it make absolutely no sense.
Just because the way you're talking about Hobbs and Shaw, if you watch Fast 9, you're going to be like, and so that guy, and the answer for me would be, yes, that guy is in Fast 3 for 6 minutes, and now he's in this movie.
Oh boy, I cannot wait. I am really excited about this.
Same here. I'm so looking forward to watching it.
Oh my God. Because like, the last two were a slog. Is that a good word? But
yes.
Like, I had so much fun leading up to the last two. Even Tokyo Drift was fun to watch.
I agree. And we're back. We're back to fun. Trust me on Fast 9. Whether it's good or not, remains to be seen, sure. But it's objectively fun.
Well, okay. If you want your review read for rate and review,
you right. Can forget about that every time.
You can write us a review. We'll read it. So Berwin Girl said, no need to be a fan of the Fast and Furious series. Add me to the list of fans of this podcast who's never watched a single frame of the Fast and the Furious series.
I mean, well, fuck, we have guests who've never watched a single frame. Might as well have listeners, too.
I love it. The hosts rock. The guests are perfect. C. Murray 725 said, yas, I am truly here, living hearing y'all talk about Van Denzel from Speedy and Furious. It's a real treat. That's very funny.
Van Denzel. From Speedy and Furious.
So
fun.
If you write a review, we'll pick some, we'll read them maybe. And we're back with our season finale. F9 came out this year, 2021. Baby, I'm so fucking excited. I cannot wait. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey.
Was a HeadGum original.